Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. We have a football show for you today. We did wrestling earlier in the week, and now we are going to hit the National Football League. Later on, we have Mike Clay talking about things he discovered in building the 2019 fantasy projections for ESPN. Some very important stuff about players who are likely to improve or decline in 2019. First, though, we are starting with a story that I did not think we were going to have to seriously discuss at this point of the NFL year. And I'm surprised that we are going to. I'm very happy we have a very qualified guest to do so. But I kind of figured the Russell Wilson contract was going to be cut and dry, simple. It would get done. There would not be any issues, no drama. That has not been the case so far. And we have an April 15th deadline that's been released. There is some very interesting stuff happening with Russell Wilson in Seattle. And joining me to discuss that is our Seahawks reporter at ESPN, Brady Henderson. Brady, how are you?
Hey, Bill, I'm doing well. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Of course, always a pleasure. I'm happy to have you on, but I'm intrigued. I mean, I want to know what you think, because you follow the team extremely closely, obviously. Did you think there was going to be this sort of, you know, it was going to be as contentious, perhaps, as it seems to be in terms of negotiating this extension for Russell Wilson?
Well, Bill, I figured there would be a deadline at some point, just because going back to the last time they had an extension negotiation in 2015, remember his side set that July 31st deadline, which was the start of training camp. So I figured that, you know, if there was no new deal, if this was going on and dragging out into the summer, that they would set that deadline again. I did not think it would be as early as it is. And, you know, I think that there's two things going on here. I think one is that Russell's side is a little disappointed that this hasn't seemed to be as big. There hasn't been that big sense of urgency on the Seahawks' part to get a deal done. And he's probably looking back at Matt Ryan last year. I remember that deal was agreed to, I think, in the spring. So presumably they were working on that, you know, all offseason up to that point. He's probably also looking at Aaron Rodgers, who got a deal done. That was last summer. But remember, he still had, I think, more than at least 2 years left on his contract.
Yeah.
So there isn't maybe that sense of urgency on the Seahawks part. Now, what they would say to that is, look, we don't do deals with more than a year left. And, you know, when they do, it's typically, you know, when they do early extensions with a year left, it's after the draft. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, I think you're seeing a little bit of disappointment in the progress from Wilson's end. And I think you're seeing a player trying to take control in the only way he can. And really, the nuclear option for players in this situation is to hold out, right? It's to not show up. I think we all agree that that's really not in Wilson's nature. He's just not really wired like that. And short of holding out, I think the best way for a player to take control of the situation is to set this deadline. So I think you're seeing a guy who's a little bit disappointed and trying to take control of the situation in really the best way that he can.
It's interesting. I mean, there's a, you know, there's this weird sort of disconnect. And I don't know if you agree with this, but in watching, you know, the Seahawks last year, and obviously a run-heavy offense to the extent that you have Dwayne Brown coming out and saying, yeah, we should throw the ball more, which you never, ever, ever hear an offensive lineman say about an offense in the NFL. Do you think, to some extent, whether it's perceived by Russell Wilson and his people or it exists in reality, do you think that the opinion of Russell Wilson in that organization, in that building, is not as high as maybe, you know, some people are in Russell Wilson outside of that building?
You know what, Bill? I don't think that is the case, because, you know, when you look at it, he still set a career high in touchdown passes last year. He tied his career low in interceptions. Go back 2 years ago to 2017, when they had, you know, just an awful running game, and he accounted, I think, for either threw for or ran for all but, I think it was one of their touchdowns. So, you know, they know how important he is. And, you know, if the deal doesn't end up getting done, if they miss that deadline and they have to go the franchise tag route, I don't think it's going to be because the Seahawks don't think Russell is the guy, right? I mean, if he's the guy, they, you know, everybody knows that. He won him a Super Bowl, or he helped them win a Super Bowl, I should say. He has been that top-level quarterback, and those are really hard to find. I think if it doesn't get done, it's going to be because of, you know, maybe a hesitation on the Seahawks' part, you know, knowing how difficult it might be to sustain, you know, how sustainable it is, I should say, in paying a quarterback, you know, $35 million plus, while also fielding, you know, a Super Bowl winning, Super Bowl caliber roster around him. When you look at who else is up, you know, Bobby Wagner, he's in the same position as Wilson going into the last year of his contract. Frank Clark, playing on a franchise tag next season at $17 million and change, and is probably wanting a deal north of $20 million. So I think if it doesn't get done, it's going to be because of some concerns on the Seahawks end, just about how feasible it is to still compete for a Super Bowl when you're spending so much money on a quarterback, not concerns about is Wilson really worth that just based on merit.
That's really interesting. I mean, when I think about this offense, not really as much last year because it was more of a coherent sort of attack last year, but there were so many seasons during the Tom Cable era where, it felt like the offense was Russell Wilson, where it was him sort of making plays out of schedule and, extending plays and making things happen. And even last year, we saw stretches where, there was that famous, I think it was the Bears game where he tried to audible and wasn't allowed to audible in a game where the offense wasn't doing anything. And then, they would turn the offense occasionally over to him and they would look impressive when they would go into, they'd go a tempo or they'd go with him, sort of running the football. And that would be sort of how they would, trigger an offensive burst for a stretch here or there. How can I put this? I mean, and do you think that there is that they should be? How can I put this? Do you think it's accurate that they could sit there and say, okay, well, we shouldn't pay Russell Wilson $35 million, that we're a better team going out and paying Frank Clark $20 million and giving someone else $15 million and starting over at quarterback versus going out there and paying Russell Wilson $35 million, even if that means moving on from someone like a Frank Clark?
Yeah, I think it's just so much easier said than done to say, right, we're going to go the unconventional route and not pay our quarterback and then try to, find that guy in the draft and hope that he develops. And, you're really trying to catch lightning in a bottle there. And, they did it once, right? They did it with Wilson. They found their guy in the third round, and they had this, championship caliber defense around him that let him sort of grow into that role. And they really weren't asking a ton of Wilson early on. It's just so much easier said than done. And do you want to wander through, the quarterback wilderness for 2 or 3 years, hoping that, you find that guy in the draft again? It's just, it's so much easier said than done. I mean, in theory, it sounds like it would be, it could work. There's just no guarantee that it will. And Wilson, you know what you have. And, so I think ultimately logic is going to prevail here and they're going to end up paying him. But, because it's just so hard. And, they remember back in the early years of the Pete Carroll, John Schneider era when it was, it was Charlie Whitehurst who they paid some money to in a trade from the Chargers. And they had Matt Hasselbeck for 1 year, but then it was Charlie Whitehurst. And then it was, Matt Flynn. It's just so hard to find that guy. And I know that's such an obvious point, but I think ultimately that's going to prevail just because they know what they have in Wilson and they know how hard it would be, even with a really good roster around him, how hard it would be to win with a guy who is not a proven commodity like he is.
If you were John Schneider and you were sitting here and you decided in your head, okay, I can't win with Russell Wilson and I have to go out and get, good value for Russell Wilson because I want to spend this $35 million a year elsewhere, which I'm not saying I agree with, but let's say that's the decision you've made when you're stepping into his shoes. What would you need to get in return to be able to trade Russell Wilson and sleep at night in terms of just that you think you've made this football team better?
Gosh, I mean, I think you would start with, you'd have to go 3 first round picks, right?
Something like that.
Maybe there's, and maybe you sort of even it out with, if you can't really, if it's not just 3 first round picks, maybe there's a way to sort of even that price out. But, and 3 is the number that comes to mind because, how many first-round quarterbacks don't work out, right? The Cardinals are looking at, possibly trading Josh Rosen after trading up to draft him, in the top 10 last year? And obviously that was a different case. He had some difficult circumstances around him. But I'm just saying, look at all the first-round picks at quarterback, and there's just no assurance that even if you're picking at the top of the draft, even if you pick that guy in the first round, you just don't know what you're getting. So if I'm in John Schneider's shoes, then that would probably be where I would start with 3 first round picks. And, I don't know how much precedent there is for a team giving up 3 first rounders for anybody, for a quarterback or anybody, but, knowing that you have him for worst case scenario, this last year of his contract, and then, feasibly 2 franchise tags because the 3rd franchise tag would be this astronomical price. So knowing that you have him, the alternative would be keeping him for at least the next 3 years. Yeah, I think that 3 first-round picks would probably be my starting point.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to – even if it's not three first-round picks, I think you need to get a quarterback back. I mean, I think you need to get someone because, I mean, it's the only guy left on their roster, if I'm not mistaken, a quarterback besides Russell Wilson is Paxton Lynch, no?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, you're starting pretty thin at quarterback, you know, with a head coach who is getting up there in age with a team that, you know, is younger than it was a couple of years ago, but still a lot of veterans on this roster. You're committing a lot of money to this team competing. I think you maybe have to go out there and even if you say, okay, let's get two first round picks and let's get, you know, Josh Rosen as some kind of, in some kind of three way trade or I'm trying to think of who else might be out there who, you know, maybe Marcus Mariota, if you can get Marcus Mariota and a first round pick or two. You know, someone who at least you can sit there and say, okay, well, here's our starting point at quarterback for 2019, and then we'll see if he's our guy and we can figure out what happens next. I mean, I just don't know that you, I don't know that you can make a sort of, I don't know if there's that balance. I think we can stay through first round picks. I don't know if anyone has the guts to do that. I mean, that's just an astronomical return. It's not out of the question. But I don't think you can trade him for much less than that. So I find it hard to think there's a trade that makes sense. I mean, for you, if I asked you 6 months ago, you know, what are the chances that Russell Wilson isn't the Seahawks quarterback in week one of 2020, what would you have said in December and what would you say now in terms of the percentage chances?
Gosh, you know, I think in both cases I would say, I don't know, 5%. Somebody asked me that recently, and I think I said 5%, 8%, you know, something less than 10. And, you know, it sounds so far-fetched, and I think it is far-fetched. But you do have to account for that possibility because, you know, if you would ask, you know, our Giants reporter, Jordan, the same thing about Odell Beckham Jr., or if you would have asked Jeremy Fowler the same thing about Antonio Brown, you know, you would not have expected – you know, with Antonio Brown's track record that he would have been traded or that the Giants would trade Odell a year after giving him this record contract. So there's just so many, you know, there's been enough of those you never know scenarios in the NFL that end up coming true. So you do have to account for that possibility, but it just seems pretty small at this point. I think that, again, I think logic is going to prevail. And, you know, going back to the, you know, the conversation about, you know, what else they would do at quarterback. Look, I think, Bill, even if they do end up paying Russell a big contract this year, that I think spending a draft pick on a quarterback is not out of the question. A, you know, like you said, Paxton Lynch is the only quarterback on their roster. So ideally, you would have another, you know, at the very least, another young developmental guy that really you've tried to have. You know, last year they drafted Alex Magoo. Didn't work out. I think he signed with Jacksonville, which is closer to his home. So at the very least, you would want a young developmental guy in there. And maybe even, you know, spending something closer to a mid-round pick on a quarterback. And again, it goes back to the sustainability question. You know, how sustainable is it to keep paying Russell Wilson at the very top of the market? I think you're going to have some guy in there who is, at the very least, somebody that you can develop and feel good about to at least have that guy and see what becomes of him. And maybe that's more than just your seventh-round sort of Alex Magoo flyer. Maybe that is, you know, a sixth or a fifth or a fourth. You know, we don't know they only have four draft picks right now, so they would have to acquire picks in some of those later rounds. But don't rule out the possibility of them drafting the quarterback, even if they get this Russell Wilson deal done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be smart to. I think at this point, you know, with John Schneider coming from, at least once upon a time, coming from an organization that was pretty known for, you know, trading up and, or trading down, excuse me, and acquiring extra picks and going after quarterbacks. You know, I think it would make sense for them to pursue, you know, that sort of thinking at the very least. And again, it's not going to be like a first or second or third round pick, but, you know, if it's a mid round pick for a guy who was once, you know, the director of football operations with the Packers, and, you know, that's an organization that had gone after quarterbacks in years past, one of whom being Matt Hasselbeck, who ended up in Seattle via trade years later. All right, Brady, well, let's get back to talking about the Seahawks in a second. But first, want to talk about our pals at ZipRecruiter. And hey, if the Seahawks happen to be in the market for a new starting quarterback in the near future, I know Pete Carroll's a bit of an old school guy, but he's a big fan of competition. He wants to make sure that he has the right candidates for any role on his roster. So I'd recommend he use our friends at ZipRecruiter, because if Pete Carroll happens to go to ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell, he's going to find a ZipRecruiter application that is so effective that four out of five employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the very first day. And hey, if you trade Russell Wilson, you want a qualified candidate almost immediately. You don't want to be stuck going into the preseason with Matt Flynn and Charlie Whitehurst as your quarterback options, as the Seahawks did in years past. I don't know that the Seahawks should trade Russell Wilson, but again, if they are considering it, if they are going to have a hole at the most important position in football, and if you have a hole at your place of employment, you should be going on ZipRecruiter, because ZipRecruiter is going to send your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, and they don't stop there. They use their powerful matching technology to scan thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and then invite them to apply to your job. So whether it's quarterback, whether it is any job, you can try ZipRecruiter for free right now if you're listening to this show by going to my exclusive web address, which is ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell. ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L, my last name. ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. In terms of the broader Seahawks organization, in terms of their broader offseason, independent of what may or may not happen with Russell Wilson, what do you think about what they've done so far? Are you surprised? Are you, is it pretty much right in line with what you expected? Do you think there's more they might do, in advance of the draft or maybe after the draft in terms of adding veteran talent?
Yeah, you know, I think at this point, you know, they are projected to have, you know, all four of their compensatory picks next year, just because they've been relatively inactive in free agency and they've had a bunch of guys leave. So I think that right now, I think they are intent on keeping those four picks. That's why you've seen the deals that they've done recently. You know, last week it was Nate Orchard and Cassius Marsh, two pass rushers who were cut by their previous team, so therefore don't affect the comp pick situation. I think that has sort of been their goal and will continue to be their goal, is to add guys, but not at the expense of you know, future draft picks. So, you know, this has sort of been a somewhat typical offseason for them. And, you know, it's not the type of offseason that's going to get fans really excited. But, you know, I made this point before free agency that, you know, you have to go back to 2015 and Kerry Williams, of all people, and we all know that people ended up. But, you know, Kerry Williams was the last guy that they signed, the last outside free agent that they signed to a multi-year deal worth more than like $5 million. And ever since then, it's been, you know, either one-year deals worth a little bit more, or it's been, you know, those sort of middle-tier, you know, just sort of inexpensive veteran guys. They really have not made a big splash since Kerry Williams. And, you know, they made the big Percy Harvin trade in 2014. They made the big Jimmy Graham trade 2 years later. But for the most part, that has sort of been this team's MO in free agency, is sort of, you know, staying out of the big spending in the early waves and going after those value plays. So as inexciting as it might be, and you know, you might look at it and say that a lot of other teams got better and they didn't really get better. They just sort of stood pat. But that's really been their MO, I think, for the last few years.
I absolutely agree. Is there a position you think they might try and address via trade?
Boy, that's a good one. You know, the problem is they just don't have a whole lot to trade right now, at least in terms of draft picks. They only have four draft picks, just because a lot of the trades that they've made in the past, there was, you know, the Dwayne Brown trade. That's why they don't have a second rounder. You know, Shalom Luani, a backup safety in the sixth round, and Brett Hundley last year in the seventh round. Or I may have gotten those two mixed up. But at any rate, they only have four picks, so they don't have a ton to trade. I think in terms of other needs, something that they might address in the draft is still edge rusher. You know, I mentioned that they signed Marsh and Nate Orchard. I think those are two short-term fixes at a position that is still a big need for them, especially when you consider that Frank Clark's playing on a franchise tag. And, you know, as we talked about earlier, there's really no guarantee that they're going to be able to pay him, just given the landscape of who else is up for contract. So I think edge rusher still, defensive tackle, a run-stuffing defensive tackle, just because of how poor their run defense was last year. And then, Bill, another interesting one is wide receiver. And I think that is tied a lot to Doug Baldwin's situation. You know, he had a brutal year last year in terms of injuries. It was just one injury after another. We know he's going in for he either has had or he's about to have his third surgery of the offseason. And interestingly, you know, back at the owners' meetings a couple of weeks ago, when Pete Carroll confirmed that he was going to have that third surgery, I asked him, okay, is this it? We know he's had the shoulder surgery, the knee surgery. He's going to have the sports hernia surgery mm-hmm. is this it? Is there anything else? And he didn't say definitively that would be it. So I think you've got to start, you know, looking hard at finding an eventual successor for Doug Baldwin, mm-hmm. Whether that's this year or next year, just because I think injuries have taken a toll on his body and also just him sort of emotionally. So, you know, receiver is a position I could see them targeting early in the draft in addition to edge rusher. And fortunately for them, it's a pretty good draft for edge rushers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that makes sense that they would target that position with draft picks they do have. Brady, it's always a pleasure to have you on. I mean, certainly if we have more developments in the Russell Wilson situation, we'll certainly have you back on. I agree with you. You know, I think it's just the logical thing is for it to play out the way that I think we both expect Russell Wilson to sign a big deal, you know, to maybe hit $35 million a year. I just, the quarterbacks you brought up, man, just I think about that. I think about the moves they were making pre-Russell Wilson. I would be willing to pay $35 million a year to not go back to Charlie Whitehurst and Matt Flynn as my quarterback options. That's just me.
Yeah, well, I don't think you're alone there. And, you know, one more thing I'll add on that, Bill, is, you know, April 15th is the deadline, right? But, mm-hmm. you know, the question I'm asking myself is, okay, well, what if the Seahawks come to him in June, you know, with the deal that he's wanted all along? You know, would he turn that down on principle? Or, you know, what if they're making really good progress? They haven't had a deal done by April 15th, but, you know, Wilson's side feels like they're making really good progress. Would maybe he be open to extending that negotiating window? So, you know, I think April 15th, we've heard that's the deadline, but I wouldn't rule out the possibility that if they feel like they're making good progress, that something gets done, you know, after that at some point this offseason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Brady, where can people check out more of your work covering the Seahawks?
Yeah, it's just at Brady Henderson on Twitter. And then on Facebook, it is at Brady Henderson ESPN. I think there's only like, you know, 20 or 30 people that follow my Facebook page, and one of them I think is my mom. So if you follow me on Facebook, you could join a very select company there. So it's at Brady Henderson ESPN on Facebook.
Awesome. Brady, thank you so much. We're going to come back with Mike Clay after the break here on the Bill Barnwell Show. All right, back here on the Bill Barnwell Show, I am now joined by a frequent contributor to the show, someone who wrote a great article about the things he learned in building the ESPN fantasy projections for 2019 recently, and that is our pal Mike Clay. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing, Bill?
I'm good. It is the middle of the offseason. We just joked about this before we went on air. You are still grinding. I feel like I'm taking some quiet time. I'm sort of like exploring some other sports, and you are out here putting the hard work in, and that is why you are so good at what you do. You are working on the fantasy projections for 2019, and how many tidbits did you find for your column?
I did 39 for this one. It seems to get bigger every year. I don't think my editors appreciate that, but every year I seem to discover more. Maybe it's a product of, maybe perhaps the new NFL. I know we're going to get into it, but, you know, there's more relevant players than ever as scoring continues to rise.
Yeah, 39 observations and all pretty useful. It's not like I was reading it. I'm like, oh, well, these seven are pretty dumb. Like they're all relevant to what's happening in 2019 and really a lot of different fascinating situations popping up. And, you know, some stuff is still obviously up in the air given that we are, still waiting to see what happens in Arizona with the first overall pick and Josh Rosen's situation. Still some free agents out there. But I think we should start, and this is going to be perhaps a difficult one for Chiefs fans to start with, and it may get you some heat, and I don't want to do that. I want to have I know that you want to have a smart conversation about it, so I want to put you in a situation where you can. In terms of Patrick Mahomes, the league MVP, what do the numbers say about what he is likely to do in the 2019 season relative to what he did during that incredible MVP campaign last season?
Well, I mean, the numbers are overwhelming and say he's going to drop off. Mm-hmm. And that's just based on league history. I mean, think back, Bill, to any of those kind of the best offense you've ever seen. Think about the greatest show on turf, the 2013 Broncos, the 2007 Patriots. Think of an offense to you that stands out as unstoppable. And then think about what they did the next season, right? They were probably pretty good, but they dropped off pretty considerably in terms mm-hmm. of their efficiency and production. And it makes sense. You see that in the NFL often, whether it's injuries or, you know, everything just kind of went right. You had variance on your side. You were hitting on all cylinders, and then the next year, that's not going to happen, right? You have to peak at some point. And that's what we've seen if we look back at league history. So what I did was I took the 30 teams that mm-hmm. scored, that the top 30 teams in terms of offensive touchdowns in a single season over the past decade, and looked at what they did the next season. And there's a lot of red, as in a lot of teams dropped off a lot. I mean, you look at the top five teams, the only 5 to go over 59 were those 2013 Broncos, the 2018 Chiefs, the 2011 Packers and Saints, and the 2012 Patriots. And those are pretty good quarterbacks, right? Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Tom Brady. The drop-offs were minus 16, minus 14, minus 9, and minus 16. I mean, that's a big, that's almost a touchdown per game, right? And if you look at the top 30 list, there was only three teams that increased the next season, and they were all the Patriots. Everybody, everyone else in the top 30, aside of the 2018 teams we don't know yet, dropped off. So maybe one of these five teams that hit this mark last season will keep it rolling. Actually, six teams in 2018 reached 50. It was kind of an abnormal year. You know, will we see kind of a regression in the mean across the NFL, or are we in a new era? That's kind of what you have to answer. But I think either way, we're going to see a drop off for this Chiefs offense, probably by 10 plus. And that doesn't mean they're going to be bad, right, Bill? I mean, they're still going to be a top scoring offense. I have Mahomes as the number one in passing touchdowns, and the Chiefs number one in a lot of categories. But I mean, they needed that offense last year to offset a terrible defense, and the defense is probably worse on paper than it was last season. So it's a tricky line to watch, but I think you have to expect less offense this year from the Chiefs.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously I agree with you. I think that you have to go with what the broader numbers say. And I think the tough part with this, when, you know, you deal with fans, especially on Twitter, and especially when it's a fan of the team, and, you know, they're just trying to support their team, and you understand that, but it doesn't mean that they're bad. It doesn't mean that they're a fraud, that they weren't good, that they're not going to be good. The Chiefs are still going to be great on offense. It's just, you know, I think you brought up good examples. I would think back to even Dan Marino, his second season, where he came out of nowhere and was league MVP, and then that was the best year of his entire career. He still made the Hall of Fame. He was still an incredible quarterback, but just everything had to go right in that one season. And I'm not saying that we've seen the best year of Patrick Mahomes' career, although that wouldn't be an insult if that were the case, given that he won league MVP and was, you know, a record-setting quarterback. I think it's just, it's so hard to have that happen year after year and have everything go right. And if Tyreek Hill gets hurt, if the running backs aren't as good as they were a year ago, if Patrick Mahomes gets hurt, you know, that's not out of the question either. You know, you have to have one thing go wrong, and suddenly the criteria that led to you having that great season just, it doesn't necessarily happen the same way. So, and when I write about it, you know, it's never an insult. I know it's the same with you as well. And it's not an insult to the Patrick Mahomes isn't going to be, you know, the one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of football next season. And he could still be really good. That sort of nuance is hard to, I think, get across sometimes.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You know, again, I still have him number one in the NFL in passing touchdowns, and that's with a drop of about 16, about one per game from last season. But yeah, I mean, there's different ways to look at it. Obviously, from a fantasy perspective, he can afford a big drop off and still be a star. We talk about that often. You think back to Cam Newton a few years ago and Matt Ryan. Mm-hmm. You say, you know, these guys can come back to earth a bit and still be stars, and that's the case for him. And then there's the other aspect, which is projecting the Chiefs.
Right.
I mean, can they offset that with that defense that lost their two edge rushers that were responsible for, you know, they were number one in forced fumbles and sacks last year, and Dee Ford and Justin Houston were responsible for right around half of both of those, and they're both gone, and they did not really replace them. So, you know, it's a tricky line to walk, but, you know, I think it could put them in some jeopardy. You know, if the defense is the same or worse as last year, but Mahomes' numbers come back to earth a little bit, he's still great, he's still an MVP candidate, but you know, he's more of a, you know, more of a guy throwing 35 touchdowns instead of 50. Can they still win 12 games? Can they win 10 games? Or will the Chargers pass them out? You know, it's going to be interesting to see what the dynamic is here for this Chiefs offense and really the Chiefs as a whole.
How do you feel about the Chiefs running game right now? Are you confident that any of these backs are the guy people should be sort of leaning towards? And obviously it's still months away from even the NFL, you know, the NFL draft still has to come, and then months away from, you know, prime fantasy football season. But if you had to draft today, given the circumstances, where would you feel comfortable drafting Damian Williams, who at least at the moment seems to be the lead back for the Chiefs?
Yeah, it's definitely tricky because Williams was not very effective, at least as a rusher, until last season, right?
Right. He was terrible.
About 3.5 yards per carry. He was never asked to do much. For now, I have him 23rd in my rankings. And, you know, Carlos Hyde's obviously the other notable back there right now. I have him at 47. So Williams right now, he's probably going to go earlier. People are reaching on him. I saw him in early drafts go as early as the second round.
Wow.
So I'm not going to do that. In fantasy, I have him right now as more of a fifth rounder. Because it wouldn't surprise me at all if they draft someone, just like think about what they did with Kareem Hunt, right? Look for a tackle breaker and elusive back in the third round, fourth round, in that kind of area. I think they'll try to do that. So whether it's, you know, Daryl Henderson or David Montgomery or, you know, someone along those lines, I think you'll see the Chiefs look to do that and then put the rookie in there with the two veterans and let them fight it out. I will say this, though. You look back at the history of Andy Reid, and he's had some talent, right? Brian Westbrook, LeSean McCoy, Jamal Charles, Kareem Hunt. I mean, he's made great use of those guys, but he usually leans on a feature back, a clear lead back. Even Spencer Ware would be an example of that the 1 year. So I think whoever wins this battle is going to be a 15-plus touch guy. But at this point in their careers, I think Williams and Hyde are more of committee back. So it's going to be interesting. But you know, right now, I'm more curious than anything to see who they draft.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that it could be a draft pick ends up leading them in carries or even undrafted free agent. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if someone who wasn't on the roster might possibly lead them in rush attempts by the end of the season. It just there's so much up in the air, and I think that you know, they're not going to put a ton of assets towards it. I don't think they're going to use a first round pick on a running back, but I think there's certainly they've had plenty of success turning mid round picks into useful contributors at the running back position in years past. A guy who did not impress last year, I think someone who people had really high hopes for, was Dalvin Cook. Obviously first year impressive, and then a torn ACL after a few games last year, never really seemed to get going. That offense was a bit of a mess, especially as the year went on. Do you have high hopes for Dalvin Cook in 2019?
I do, and I liked him last year. Obviously, he was beat up with the injuries, and then you had Minnesota come in with a pass-heavy offense, and they underwhelmed. They were more of a slightly below-average scoring offense when we expected a lot more with Kirk Cousins joining the team. But, you know, he kind of came on later in the season. They went back to the run with Kevin Stefanski. He got a lot of volume. In fact, he averaged 14% of the targets for the offense, 61% of the carries. Works out to about 14 carries, 5 targets. Actually, that's, to be clear, that's throughout his career when he's been healthy and on the field. But nonetheless, he gets the volume. He's a feature back. They want to run the football a lot, and he's been effective, right? He's averaging almost 4.7 yards per carry. He's been above average against after contact, above average in terms of yards per target. He's an effective receiver, rusher, and again, volume is king, and he's going to get it in this offense. So I'm definitely buying on Cook.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, and I think there's a really interesting sort of thing happening behind the scenes there, and that they did go out and hire Gary Kubiak, who the hallmark of his offense is that they've been able to run the football, get the outside zone working, and have had success with, I mean, so many different running backs going back to the Denver days, and Terrell Davis, Mike Anderson, Alandis Gary, then in Houston, Steve Slayton, Dominique Williams, and then Arian Foster had that huge run in Baltimore, and even back in Denver. I mean, they've been able to run the football pretty much everywhere he has gone, and he's not going to be the OC or the HC there, but he's going to have a meaningful role, and I do think that can be an offense that really plays to Dalvin Cook's strengths. So where do you have him right now in your projections, actually?
Let's see here. I have Cook coming in at pulling it up as I'm talking to you right now, so play some music in the background. I have him 264 carries, just under 1,200 yards, 54 catches, 401 yards, so that works out to RB12 in the projection. So right in that, you know, David Johnson, Joe Mixon, Fournette, Nick Chubb, sort of range Devontae Freeman, that's about where he falls.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's higher than maybe, you know, you might think about the running backs if you were just ranking them, you know, in terms of broader fantasy football production off the top of your head. I don't think Cook would be that high, but I mean, I absolutely see that he could have that role in that offense if things break right. And you mentioned actually someone I wanted to talk about, who was Leonard Fournette. How do you feel about the Jags and other teams who were low in terms of scoring last season? Are there particular teams that you're high on in terms of expecting them to improve? And are there any players who you think are uniquely positioned to benefit from, you know, any positive regression towards the mean?
Yeah, I definitely think we should see more scoring from the Cardinals and Jags. And that's, again, just like we talked about with the Chiefs earlier, it's kind of the opposite, right? If you look at the offenses that have struggled, that have been under 1.5 touchdowns per game over the past decade, you see a pretty nice leap across the board. Without getting too into the numbers, you know, they leap pretty significantly. So that suggests that the Cardinals and Jags should both be better, and it makes sense, right? What are the odds that you're going to be at the bottom of the NFL in scoring 2 years in a row? You just don't see that. Also, a big scheme change for the Cardinals offensively coming, and it could be a quarterback change there too, depending on what they do with that first pick. The Jags bring in Nick Foles, who I do have some reservations, but you know, they want to run the ball, and he's certainly an upgrade on what they had last season. So specifically, you know, benefactors, potential guys that could take a leap forward, I think Fournette's one of them, again, just because of volume, right? He's going to push past 300 touches mm-hmm. if he's healthy and on the field. I worry about, is he the next Trent Richardson, in terms of efficiency? I mean, it's been pretty bad. I think if you look at my projections, he's probably dead last in terms of yards per carry projections across the board. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty conservative with those. But you have to look at what he's done so far. He runs against heavy boxes. He gets a lot of a lot of opportunities against those stacked boxes and at the goal line, and that's a factor there. And he also has not been effective between the 20s. So I definitely have some concerns there. But again, volume should be good in this offense, and there should be additional scoring chances with Foles under center. D.D. Westbrook is a guy mm-hmm. who's of interest in this Jags offense. I keep an eye on him. I think he's going to come in undervalued. He was pretty good and effective, and he's seen a lot of volume so far in two seasons in the league. But again, they were dead last in offensive touchdowns last year, and
right.
and that didn't give him much of a chance to score many touchdowns. So I'd keep an eye on him. And then for Arizona, Christian Kirk, second-year receiver, yeah. is the guy I think you need to monitor. And David Johnson, honestly, if he falls to round two, he could end up being a steal. Again, his efficiency has quietly been pretty poor the past mm-hmm. couple of years, but he's still a feature back in an offense that could be could keep him extremely busy and should score more touchdowns this mm-hmm. season. They've talked a lot about him. Cliff Kingsbury's talked about him, getting him the football, so I'd keep an eye on him too.
Yeah, and it's not like his injury, over the past 2 years or 3 years has been, leg-related or, hamstring or knee or foot or ankle. It's been, he dislocated his wrist. And that's a pretty freak injury in terms of injuries mm-hmm. that go. And he was healthy in 2016, healthy last year, not effective last year, and certainly on a bad team with a horrible offensive line, but, stayed healthy. So not a guy who I think in some ways could be underrated, like you said, relative to, where he was going this time last year, where he would have been, what, a top three, top four, top five back?
Yeah, no question about it. He's going to fall a little bit. You're clearly going to see a different top five or six at running back, and then he's going to fall into that next tier, like Cook and Mixon, guys who Mixon I like a lot as a guy that can make a leap, but he's going to fall down into that conversation. Should go probably in round two, and there's an opportunity there. We'll see. We'll see if the Kyler Murray, if he lands in Arizona, and the Cliff Kingsbury hype starts mm-hmm. to build. Their O-line's a little bit better. They added some pieces. So we'll see if Johnson builds up some hype. But for now, I think he's looking like a potentially undervalued back.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I want to talk about, and this is not necessarily addressed in the column we're discussing here, but something you brought up in your projection, something Matthew Berry brought up in his projections and on Twitter, which really fascinated me because I didn't at first glance agree with it. But then the more I think about it, the more I'm kind of coming on to your guys' line of thinking here. Who is your number one wide receiver in terms of projections heading into 2019?
Yes, Matthew and I both have Devontae Adams. So that's what you're referring to. I think the consensus may end up being DeAndre Hopkins, but mm-hmm. it's going to be a close call. And here's the thing. You start with touchdowns with Adams, right? Yeah. Nobody is more over the past three seasons. He is 12, 10, and 13, and it's legitimate. I mean, he gets a ton of volume near the end zone. He has Aaron Rodgers, who is the captain of making low, what do you want to call him? Low percentage throws work, maybe that's, yes. He's kind of been the king of that throughout his career. Adams last year was the number one fantasy receiver through week 16. He was almost the number one overall, but of course he sat out with the injury in week 17. And here's the thing, you could point to touchdowns all day long. He's finished second at wide receiver in that category each of the past three seasons. But it was more than that last year. He was fourth in pass routes at receiver. He was fourth, and by the way, this is with the missed game in there too. Mm-hmm. Fourth in targets, fifth in receptions, sixth in receiving yards, and third in end zone targets too. So, it maybe hasn't been the most efficient guy in the world. Again, some of that is the low percentage throws he gets from Rodgers, but the volume was there too. I mean, when you get a 30% target share in a pass heavy Aaron Rodgers led offense and you get work near the end zone, I mean, the sky's the limit. This isn't just a touchdown-dependent receiver anymore. This mm-hmm. is one of the highest-volume wide receivers in the NFL. So I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, he averaged, 169 targets over 15 games last year. I can do math. I'm really good at math. 11.3 targets per game last year. That's legitimate. I mean, and there's no reason to think, looking at their roster right now, that someone is going to step up and suddenly – take away a ton of those targets. They have a couple young receivers, as you get to in your column, and they have Jimmy Graham, who could theoretically play a bigger role, though he's getting older. We don't know the offense is going to change dramatically under the stewardship of their new head coach. But I do think that there is, a legitimate chance that he even gets more targets this year than he had last year. That's sort of scary, given that he could still have some upside here.
Yeah, he's only 26. I mean, it's definitely possible we haven't seen his highest target season yet. And again, you have another game that you could potentially count on. Now he's missed, you know, he's missed at least one game three of the past four seasons. That's something not to forget about.
Sure.
But by the way, just to touch on Hopkins too, who again is the top contender there, between Adams and Hopkins to be the first receiver off the board. His target shares was, his target share was down a bit last year when you had Will Fuller and Kiki QT on the field together. And that was rare. You know, you didn't see that much. Even Demaryius Thomas, they brought him over and he got hurt pretty quickly. So, when he had, two of the other receivers on the field with him, you saw a drop from around, you know, 33-34% down to 29-30%. And again, then you're getting him down into Adams' range. And who has the higher touchdown upside? Who's going to do more with the ball in his hands? Probably Devontae Adams. So, you know, again, we're talking about the cream of the crop here. Either, you know, if you get either guy in the first round of a fantasy draft, you're happy. But, you know, that's something to keep in mind as well. There's going to be more competition for targets in Houston than there is in Green Bay, believe it or not.
Very fair. Very fair. A big question mark right now for me. I want to know what you think. And again, it might just be as simple as saying, hey, we don't know yet because they're still going to make some moves. But Patriots post Gronk, are you picturing a dramatically different share for anybody in that lineup in terms of their target share? Are you still thinking there's going to be more additions and you have to wait and see? Or anyone who, you know, you think is undervalued right now in the public's eyes relative to what you think they might end up with in terms of their projections?
Yeah, it's kind of pick your poison to some extent, right? Because you have Julian Edelman, you know that, and then you have James White and Sony Michel. They're going to be valued about market, I think. They'll be drafted relatively early in drafts, fine. No big change. Maybe a few more targets for Michel, but I don't think you'll see much of a change there in the backfield. But after that, I mean, after in terms of pass catchers, you have Edelman, then it's a huge question mark, right? Yeah. So you could take a late stab on Philip Dorsett, who right now is a flex option as the roster stands, because it's Edelman, it's Dorsett, and then it's Bruce Ellington, Maurice Harris, Braxton Berrios. I mean, all of these guys are late round dart throws at this point, but
yeah,
I don't think they're done. You know, is it Michael Crabtree, the free agent? Is it Dez Bryant that shocks us all? Is it a second round or first round wide receiver? You know, we don't know who they're going to add. I would suspect that they're not going to go into the season with these guys as their top receiver. So we'll keep an eye on that. And then, you know, at tight end, I know they like Jacob Hollister a lot. He was inactive a lot last season, injured. But he's a youngster, just been around a couple of years. They like him. He could potentially develop as their top tight end. And Matt LaCosse they brought in from Denver as well. So those are names that you should be monitoring in deep dynasty leagues. Maybe throw them on the end of your bench. But otherwise, you know, I'm kind of wait and see mode for this Patriots offense. I want to be invested. I just don't know who the right name is just yet.
I remember what was that year where the Patriots went into training camp and it was going to be Zach Sudfeld and Kembrell Tompkins?
Oh, yeah. That was long ago. Yeah, that was not long ago.
And then June Edelman ended up with 151 targets that year. So someone's going to find the ball. Someone is going to get targets in that offense. We just don't know necessarily who it is yet besides Edelman, I guess, assuming he stays healthy. Let me finish up with this. In terms of the quarterback situation, a lot of quarterbacks we can get to. Let's get to the two rushing quarterbacks here who really made a dramatic, and I guess a couple other guys did, but two guys who had a dramatic impact in fantasy with their legs during the second half of the season. That was Lamar Jackson in Baltimore and Josh Allen in Buffalo. Do you think they are going to be as impactful with their legs in 2019?
I don't think so. I think it's kind of normal, I think, for maybe a second year quarterback to rely more on his arm a bit. I think it's going to have to be the case. I mean, are the Ravens going to be able to win with a lesser defense? Obviously, they lost a ton of personnel this offseason. Yeah. Are they going to be able to run the ball that often and effectively? And kind of the same thing with Buffalo. They're not going to be able to make a playoff run and get to be back to being a Super Bowl contender with a guy that just scrambles on, you know, a 20% of his on a 20% of his dropback. So I think they're going to have to, and I think league history suggests they will too, right? There's always that question, are we entering a new era? Maybe. But, you know, Lamar Jackson only started half the games last season and set a single season quarterback record with 147 carries. I mean, that puts him on a pace for, you know, almost 300 carries. Is that realistic for him to keep up 16 carries a game over those final eight games? I don't think so. I think you look back at the most prolific quarterbacks in league history, like Michael Vick and Cam Newton, and you know Mike Vick never cleared 123 carries in a season. Cam Newton, he's never cleared 139 in a season. So you know, is Jackson going to get to 200? Is Josh Allen going to get to 200? He was on pace for 130 last year on a 16 game pace. So you know, it's going to be interesting. So for now, I do have Jackson breaking his own record. I have him at 167 because I think this is going to be a very unique offense. They did not really do much at wide receiver. They brought in a lot of slot receivers. They have Willie Snead and Seth Roberts, arguably their top two receivers. They have a bunch of tight ends. Wow. They re-signed Nick Boyle. They have 2 second-year tight ends, a bunch of running backs. I think they're going to try to run him and run the offense, run the ball as often as they can. And then I have Allen at 108. I think with their additions at wide receiver, they'll try to throw the football more. And the only other thing I'd say, Bill, is, you know, health, right? Can they hold up? Because you know they're going to run a lot. It's just a matter of to what extent. Can they hold up if they are running the ball, you know, 8 to 10 times a game? It's hard in this league, I think, and it's hard to imagine them both playing 16 games if that's the case.
Yeah, Josh Allen already got hurt last season, missed a couple games. Lamar Jackson, like you mentioned, only played the second half of the year, so we didn't see him over a full season. I agree with you. I mean, I think that Lamar Jackson is super talented. I think that, you know, some semblance of this offense can work, but I just think it's going to be tough for him to stay healthy, and I wouldn't want to have to rely on that week to week. You know, there'll be games where I think he'll play a meaningful role, but just thinking about that wide receiver depth chart, I know this in the back of my head that they're thin there, but man, it's Willie Snead and Chris Moore, and that's pretty much it. I mean, at this point, they really have, you know, some significant work to do at adding help at wide receiver. And then, with Josh Allen, I mean, it wasn't like the offense there was built around him running the ball. It just happened because the offensive line wasn't great, because he didn't trust his reads. He was still a very inexperienced quarterback. So I think they're not going to, they don't want him to run the ball the way that the Ravens want Lamar Jackson to run the football. The Ravens want to build their offense around Lamar Jackson. The Bills, you know, they want to surround Josh Allen with talent. And it could be like a Mitchell Trubisky thing where you have a guy who is, you know, inexperienced and still is a great athlete and still has the opportunity to make plays and could run the ball and find a good balance. But, you know, with Allen, I think that they want to see him throw the football, and the moves they made this offseason, all the investments they made along the offensive line at receiver, they're designed to put him in situations where he can throw the ball. So, between the two of them, I think I would lean towards Jackson as more likely to deliver, you know, a pretty significant impact with his legs than I would Josh Allen next season.
Yeah, no question. And both could potentially be fantasy relevant, by the way, because of what they do with their legs. It's a huge component to it. And I have Jackson at over 800 yards with 6 rushing touchdowns. I have Allen over 600 yards with 7 touchdowns. Obviously, he got work near the goal line. And I think both offenses should be pretty similar in offensive scoring, most likely. Remember, the Ravens were bottom 10 in offensive touchdowns per game when Jackson was a starter last year. They really just relied on milking the clock and letting the defense do the damage. And I'm not sure they're going to be able to do it after that overwhelming purge of talent on the defensive side of the ball.
It's going to be tough. The Bills are probably the better defense heading into 2019, a really underrated defense. So if they can get something going on offense, that could be a quietly impressive football team. But Mike, we are out of time. Always appreciate you coming on the show. Where can people check out more of your insights into fantasy football and the NFL as a whole?
Yeah, we'll be on, of course, on ESPN.com, mostly the fantasy section, the NFL section. Once in a while, I try to infringe on your territory when I can a little bit. And then the Daily Wager now. We're doing some NFL on there. We did all 32 win totals last week, so check those out on demand. We're going to have an article kind of recapping that come out in the next couple of weeks. But, it's the season, you know, pre-draft. We're getting ready to roll. Mike Clay NFL on Twitter, of course. I'll be tweeting the projection sheets out here soon. So there's always something to do, Bill, so I'll be keeping busy.
Highly recommended follow on Twitter. Check out his stuff on ESPN, Mike Clay. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, thanks so much to my guests today, ESPN's Brady Henderson and Mike Clay. Thanks so much for listening to the show today. And if you haven't listened to Mina Kimes' show yet, don't be a dum-dum. Go listen to Mina Kimes' show. It's an excellent, excellent podcast. It features Lenny, top 5 dog for me, not number 1. Maggie is near and dear to my heart, but Lenny's a great dog, makes an appearance on the show every week, and this week Mina is doing a mock draft with ESPN's Joel Anderson, and there's a conversation with Washington Husky safety Taylor Rapp, the Chinese-American safety, who is expected to go in the first couple rounds of this year's NFL draft. So check Mina's show out. Thanks for listening to my show, and we have more audio coming for you next week. So thanks for listening.